Hey, hi, what's up? It's your guy Elias Omar, and I just wanted to take a hot second to tell you about Newsly. Newsly is an audio app for iOS and Android. It picks up articles about the most trending topics on the web at any given moment and reads them to you in a natural human voice. Imagine that. For the first time in history, you can listen to the internet. It's almost like you're reading The Matrix. It's crazy. You can browse articles from topics that you choose. Anything. From quadricep development to gnomes with bad New York accents, and just start listening. Oh, and guess what? They also have podcasts as well. You could check out shows from over 40 countries. And of course, yes, our pod, Everrealm Adventures, is there too. So go download and use Newsly for free now at www.newsly.me. Or just go to the link in the show description. And make sure that you use promo code Everrealm, EverrealM, and you'll get a 1 month free premium subscription. It's that easy. So check out Newsly, guys. Stop scrolling and start listening.
The killers wheel javelins. Backed in the corner, no man yields, reveals the acumen. Butterflies in your gut feel like dragons in your abdomen. Surface chrysanthemums, the anthems that they chattering. A convocator, hater, advocates are arrogant. The gun kinda unoriginal, I predict a pattern. I put the flame in your brain like a jack-o'-lantern. A taboo boy, random OG, ran dialect, filth the universal like Caligula landed on Saturn. The target in particular, they all my prey. Top of the food chain, orca stalking where the dolphins play. Vocalize my issues quite clearly. Before your eyes cauterize the game severely. Put it simply, craft the next level of lock stage like the Ice Age kept natives from crossing the Welcome Barren Strait.
Welcome to the Everrealm. Welcome to the Everrealm. Welcome to the Everrealm.
Special content warnings for this episode include teen and child death, violence against teens and children, child abuse, child trafficking, childhood trauma, bullying, hallucinations, compulsive thoughts, nightmares, self-harm, manipulation, mind control, and medical experimentation.
Sage is moving. Sage at this point is like skittering forward.
Okay, yeah. Yep. You are skittering forward. You move closer and closer and closer, Sage, until you get within 10 feet of the source of the voice, which is very, very close. And your blind sense kicks in. And the entity, the man, speaking with Olu's voice is much, much, much bigger than Olu. You feel his presence in your blind sense radiating, hanging heavy upon it, like a bowling ball on a net. He's right there in front of you, this thing. And as soon as you realize that in scorpion form, the rest of you see the only two pinpricks of light in the entire dark expanse of this shadow click into existence. Those two marble-sized little crescent shapes, those eyes, 4 feet high, 6 feet high, 10 feet high, 12 feet high, and curling out of the darkness directly above you, Sage, are two long, pale hands. And I need each of you to make a charisma save.
Oh, damn it.
Ooh, 9.
Okay, a 9.
16.
10.
So I haven't played a druid before,
So do I use my charisma or a scorpion's charisma?
You use your charisma.
Okay. 14.
14. Okay.
Damn. Just for reference, a scorpion's charisma is -4.
-4.
Yeah, I know. I was looking at it.
Yeah,
that's right. It's a ruling I'm making. It might be wrong, but in my head, you might have a scorpion's strength and dex, but it's still you in the scorpion, I feel. Okay. So that means it's going to be Aurora first with your 9. Aurora, as this thing, the tall man, the beast, the monster that killed Rain, the beast whose voice is so familiar to you because you've lived with it for over 20 years. Those eyes rise up and then poof, poof, the darkness bleeds away. And all of you, not just Aurora, all of you see Aurora as a child 20 years ago. It's like you're there, you don't have bodies, but it's like you're dreaming in like third person view. You know what I mean? Like you can see something that's happening though you don't have corporeal form. But Aurora, you are a child again. This is a memory. The fingers of the woods on Shisuva Hill are tall, long, and lanky. And they're spindly, too. The last leaves, I think, of spring trying to sprout past the buds, but not quite there yet. Dead pollen hangs in the air, and the sound of children laughing and playing and gambling nearby also disrupt the preternatural silence. Aurora, you are playing with some friends.
Okay.
These are the other friends in town who are, you know, they're quite popular. They are the kids that everyone wants to be. This is before you met Cersei, before you became friends with Saj, before you befriended Riho. This is back when you were still part of the cool kids club. There's maybe 7 or 8 of you here just sort of like dicking around in the woods. When I think you're also playing, you're maybe like shoving, you're like talking, you're like, you know, doing some like back talk back and forth with some kids. And the one kid that you're kind of butting heads with is this asshole, Colton. Colton Hughes. What about Colton just pisses you off, Aurora?
I think it's just because Colton is always nagging and always poking at me and points out like my insecurities or points out things that bother me. So I think it's just Colton gets under my skin. He's just one of those that is just nitpicking and everything's always so perfect in his world.
What specific insecurity has he been picking on you as of late?
I think it's because I said I was like really tall and skinny. So I think it's just the fact that he points that out, you know, like the fact that I'm skinny, you know, not as pretty as the other girls or, you know, slaps my locks, you know, just makes me feel a little insecure.
Totally. He's like a broad, burly elf kid, I think. And as you're all playing around, he's sort of like picking on you a little bit, even like amongst the popular kids. He's going, Aurora, all right, stick bug, get over here.
Colton, you're so annoying.
I'm annoying you with your big fucking, they should call you Fivehead.
You're going to regret those words one day.
Oh yeah? Am I? Just like your mom and dad probably should have regretted making you. Because what? Giving birth to a stick bug?
Why don't we go play, Colton? I've got a game.
Oh yeah? What kind of game?
I don't know. I want to show you something. Something I found in the woods.
Okay. What? The stick bug nest you're from? Is it crawling with little ants and other little weirdos?
Yeah. Want to see it?
Okay. Sure. And like Colton is like weirdly disarmed by that. Like you accepting the dig. So he follows you deeper into the woods away from the other kids.
Okay, so we walk into the woods and then...
And he's like ribbing you the entire time, just like picking on you, nagging you, pulling at your hair.
So then we stop. And as we stop, I go, Colton, look over here. I'm gonna show you something.
What is it? What is that?
And I pull out a long sword. Take a look at it.
Where'd you find that? Did you find that in that thorn bush over there? It's all rusted.
Isn't it cool?
I want it. Give it to me.
Come closer. I'll give it to you.
And he sort of scoffs and sort of marches toward you, maybe 30 feet away from the other kids.
And as he marches towards me, I pierce it through his stomach.
And he looks down and we see like bright red blood spreading across Colton's gut. And his eyes are like wide. They're so wide. They're like almost bugging out of his head. Like the shock of you stabbing him seems to be overriding the pain at first. And then the pain hits. And he starts to scream.
So then I cover his mouth and lay him down to the ground. And I say, what was it I was again? What was it you said?
And he's like struggling past your fingers and also the blood that's starting to flood his lungs. So he can't really speak.
And then I pull the sword out. I bury it. And then I wait until, like, I kind of like put my hand over his nose so he goes unconscious a little bit. And then I start screaming, oh my God. I start screaming so all my friends can come running and see. I don't know what happened to Colton.
Yeah. And this is the scene where that starts to fade away as all the other kids peel over. And like one of the other kids is like, what happened? Oh my God, what happened? And like someone else is like, whoa, that was that old sword we saw in the thorn bush the other week. What? Did he trip? And like the other kids are all just sort of like gathering around and being like freaking out. We like pull away from this scene into darkness. And I think all of you hear the voice that rings in Aurora's head, now visible to every single one of you. This is what you are, Aurora. You are a child of the darkness. Don't deny your true nature.
So then Aurora stands up and she reaches for his hand.
I'm sorry, what was that last bit?
I said I reach for his hand.
The monster's hand. Oh, as you pull out your hand and those like fingers begin to reach toward you, darkness falls again. And we light up on an experiment room. All of you see it as well, floating out of your bodies, looking down as impartial third parties, except for Riho. Riho, you are strapped down to a gurney. There are various machines next to you, thaumaturgical devices, magitech readouts, like beeping kind of robotically in the back, and these like huge vials and pistons full of all kinds of alchemical liquids and compounds. And your parents are on either side of the gurney. It's your father who has those proud embroidered mage robes on, and your mother on the other side. Your father isn't so hunched, isn't so stiff in this particular memory. He still has it, right? He still has his ability to innovate. Unfortunately, you are the subject of his tests. And I think all of you watch as Riho's parents run test after test after test through Riho's like tiny, like teenage, like writhing body. And it's horrifying. It's agonizing to watch. And the mother seems like hesitant. She's like not quite sure, but she's going along with it. And the father is like the main one in charge, is sort of like pumping syringes through your veins and sort of like looking at the readouts, consulting various notebooks and graphs until eventually there's like one final jolt of electricity that goes through Riho, and we see a blue phantom pulse for just a second off of Riho's body, like a ghost exploding out of their sternum before it pulses back down. And Riho, how are you experiencing this? What's going through your mind? What are you saying?
The images are pretty vague for Riho. It's just all pain. It's all red. It's all bright lights flashing in their eyes. Hearing the sounds, the beeping of the machines, the pain of needles going into their arms. And then that blue light right in front of their face, a version of themselves that doesn't feel any pain, that's never been experimented on, and then it disappears.
And you hear your father say, there it is, there it is, there, the phantasm, did you see it? And your mother goes, I did, I can't believe it's working. Well, of course it's going to work. We are in Adan, after all. Anything impossible has to work here. Again. And your mother like cranks the lever again, and electricity jolts through you once more, and we see your father's glasses like light up with this lightning, this blue smoke, this light, this like fervor, this scientific fervor glinting in the depths of his eyes. Oh, you're not going to be a disappointment any longer for us, Riho, because you won't be Riho anymore, will you? You will be Ori. If we can just replace you with Ori, if we can just have the version of our child that's supposed to be strong, supposed to be smart, supposed to be courageous, and instead we end up with you, but it's not going to be that any longer. We're going to have Ori. We're going to have Ori.
Tears streaming down Riho's face, just down the side of his face. Just their face, their vision is just blurred and blind with tears and agony.
And then we like do a hard cut to the fallout of this And I think you're sort of huddled in a corner, maybe even in like a cage of some sort. Like you're kind of chained in, you're kind of barred in. It's almost like a little cell, and you're exhausted, Riho. Like you're slumped over. You've got all sorts of fucked up scars and marks all over your body. And next to you is Orih, perfect spectral form. A blue illusion that is not an illusion, a version of you in an alternate timeline pulled here and anchored to your consciousness by your parents. The two of you are slumped in the cell together, sitting next to each other. And like beyond the bars, your father's sort of pacing, looking upset, disappointed. And your mother's trying to calm him down, but he's not having it. Ugh, I wanted to replace the brat with Orih, not this unstable mess. Now Orih is half here and Riho's, what a failure. And you know he's talking about you, Riho.
Orih stands up and through the cage looks at Riho's father, stares him dead in the eyes. This is what you wanted. This couldn't love your son. You couldn't love them for one moment.
What's there to love? He doesn't have any of the alchemical scientific genius of his mother or I. Picks fights all the time in school. He's a degenerate. But you, Orih, you are a possibility from another dimension. You are Riho fully realized. If I could just swap the two of you out. Well, I suppose we'll settle for this. What do you think, darling? What should we call this? This echo of what Orih should be. And I think your like parents look at you through the bars, look at you and Orih side to side. One of you, even though you're a phantasm, the more real child than the one of flesh and blood. Then the darkness pulls down again. And that voice addresses you now, Riho. That same dark, growling voice coming from the mouth of the beast.
You fear he was right, don't you, Riho? That you, in your pathetic halfness, is all that you are, is all that you'll ever be, and will never be enough.
Riho absorbs this question. I was never enough. I was always too weak. I couldn't be a good friend. I couldn't save Rain.
Rain! Ah, yes, Rain. Their fears were delicious. I remember them even to the end. Their greatest fear was that I'd get the rest of you. A noble soul to the end. A delicious feast.
Having said that,
and as
something comes together in Riho. Something deep, and it's a feeling of like a broken heart that's slowly mending a little bit. And Riho looks up at this thing and says, "If I was never enough, then I'm more than enough now."
I suppose we'll have to wait and see about that, won't we? But please abide the rules of the game of story time.
And the darkness sweeps over all of you again. And this time, you all see Saj. Saj, it's raining. You're a kid again. The river by Idan is overflowing. And this rain is just washing down everywhere. It's streaming down your face, streaming down your back. It is drenching. I think the box of rocks that you've got clutched in your arms. But you're running. You are running. You are slipping on the grass. There's mud kicking up all around you. Why are you running?
Because there are individuals who are chasing me. That pick on Saj, that bully Saj. Because he's a little awkward, doesn't really know how to talk to his peers. He feels more comfortable around adults, actually.
Totally. And as you're running along the banks of this river, like running, just like booking it, slipping sometimes in the mud, you hear these bullies behind you go, "Hey, you fucking nerd, stop running. Yeah, if you stop running, we'll beat you up a little less hard."
Saj hears that and just hazards a glance over his shoulder, and he doesn't know how to respond. He doesn't know how to stop this, so he just keeps running.
I think you slip on a patch of really wet mud or like some sort of like hidden grass and you like fall and like mud sprays up and gets in your face and in your eyes a little bit. And your collection of rocks, this collection that you had handcrafted, that you had searched all up and down Shasuva Hill, all up and down the banks of this river, like all throughout the surrounding woods. You have handpicked these rocks. And you know that each one is special. You know the names of each one, the species of each one. You've even named a few of them, right beyond what they are. And they just spill, like, all over the embankment, all over the mud. Right, as you start to, like, pull yourself up to your feet, the bullies catch up. A couple of them are on you immediately. They just, like, jump you from behind, and they, like, pummel you to the ground, and, like, the wind poof, is, like, knocked out of your lungs. And a couple of the other bullies, the ringleader, Colton, actually, like, picks up some of the rocks, right, and is, like, looking at them as his, like, goonies sort of, like, pin you to the ground and, like, keep you there. What's this? Oh my gods, are these your friends? Are these the only friends you have? What are these little pieces of paper? What are these names?
Just leave my stuff alone. Look, I'm not even doing anything to you. I'm just leave that alone, please. Just put it back in a box, please.
Oh my gods, they should call you Saj the Sad Sack. And like all the bullies start laughing. Your only friends are rocks. I guess they're the only things as dull and weird as you.
Okay, look, I don't want any problems with you guys. All right. Yeah, look, you pinned me. All right. I'm not strong. Okay, whatever. Like, just leave me alone.
Hey, Saj the Sad Sack, which one's your favorite? If you tell us your favorite, we'll let you alone.
The jade one, that little kind of greenish one that's like right by your foot over there. That's my favorite.
Colton looks down, and I think it's like a smooth like pebble of jade. It's like really pretty. He leans down and he picks it up. Oh, nice. Nice. This is a nice one. Yeah, it's nice and smooth. Chuck the rest. And, like, his friends run forward, and they start picking up the rest of the rocks and chucking them into the river. And it's just getting swallowed up by, like, the rushing water and the rain coming down.
And Saj is livid, but he's scared. But at the same time, he does have some abilities as a kid. And I think even on the ground, he'll cast Thorn Whip at one of the kids and try to, like, wrap around his wrist to keep him from throwing the stone that's in his hand.
Sure. Yeah. It comes out. Thorn Rip comes out of the ground onto one of the, like, the lackey's wrists and prevents him from, like, chucking an igneous rock. Ow! What the fuck's wrong with you? Colton! And Colton looks at you, like, pissed off that you dared to be kind of defiant against, like, one of his lackeys. And he, like, strides up to you, still pinned against the ground. You little bitch. And Colton, like, kneels down and starts to, like, force your mouth open. If you want to be so mouthy, how do you like it if I stuff your best friend down your fucking throat? And he starts to try to, like, force the jade piece, like, down your throat through your mouth. And, like, you're, like, I bet you're, like, resisting. You're, like, trying to bite. Like, it's, but he's strong. Colton is a huge, burly elf. Like, he, this kid, it looks like he's a senior when he's in eighth grade. You know what I mean? This kid is, like, 5'10", right? And he's, like, 13, 14 years old. He's huge. And he's like trying to like rip your jaw open and stuff that stone in. And I think actually it's on that moment where poof, the darkness returns and that voice cuts in back in the pit.
You've always been a failure, haven't you, Saj? Failure of bravery. Failure now of a salesperson. Failure of a son. An unimportant nobody.
Not unimportant. I matter.
Do you?
I do. I was a child then.
Even your friends don't believe in you. What have you ever made that's ever been of worth? Nothing.
When we get Olu, when we get through this, I'll show you what I'm worth. I'll show you who I am.
I'd like to see you try, Saj the Sad Sack. But we have one more chapter in story time, don't we?
And the darkness falls down once more. And Circe lights up on your home. The same home that feels so far away now. The same home that you know your mother in a different time in a different place is preparing your father's famous seafood stew, but this isn't that time, this isn't that place. Circe, you're in a living room. Your father's there. He's a short, bearded man. He's really congenial. He's ebullient. But as of late, he's been a little sick, coughing more, looking a little languorous. Even your mother isn't quite sure what's wrong with him, but she has her own patience to deal with. She has trusted you with brewing him a healing potion. And your father, this kind of stout bearded man, is sort of like sitting down on a sofa and kind of like coughing into his elbow as you're brewing this potion, I think, in the kitchen. Ah, Cersei, love, is that potion almost ready? I got a frog in my throat.
Yes, Paul, it's just got a little bit longer. Maybe about 10 minutes. Just give it some time.
10 minutes, really? Your mother usually takes a fortnight to brew a healing potion with this magnitude.
Well, it's been going for quite some time, so, you know, just, we're getting to the end.
All right. I can't wait to see the kinds of potions you invent and make up. You're so talented already, Cersei.
Well, thanks, Paul. I guess I can definitely say you are more supportive than everybody else.
Well, you can be whatever you want to be, Cersei. The world is your oyster. An oyster is a key ingredient in my seafood stew.
Of course it is, and we make sure we have plenty. I actually have been thinking about possibly branching out, so we'll see. Perhaps you can maybe talk to Mamma?
Yes, of course. You are growing to your own young women. I know that we have long since been a line of healers, but, hey, I don't want to tell you how to live your life. I had to figure out I wanted to be a healer when I was your age, and I think every young person should get the chance to choose. I know your mother and I don't see eye to eye about that, but, I'll see if I can talk to her later tonight about that. And he winks at you.
She's just going to, you know, kind of giggle to herself and continue stirring.
Okay. I think we do like a quick time lapse of when the potion is ready. And Cersei, what's off about this potion?
It didn't brew long enough. It needs maybe about another hour from what I said. It was going to be 10 minutes, but it's just a few minutes. It can't be that bad. Yeah, I really want to go play with my friends. It's okay. I have some pre-brewed over here. You know, they're not as strong, so I have to, you know, but he can take this one and I'll just replace this old thing when I get back. I'm so sick of being in here. So sick of potions.
So I think we cut to like 10 minutes later and you're like handing your father the potion that you kind of hurried through because I think maybe you're anxiously looking out the window like, oh my god, the sun's almost down and then your mom's gonna be home from work and you and your friends were gonna play at the mansion today. You're just gonna explore the library today. Like, come on, right? So you hand your dad the potion and he smiles like brightly at you and takes it and drinks it. Tastes a bit strong, darling. Are you sure you let it simmer long enough?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I did. I mean, you know, it's the same week long that we usually do.
All right, well, I trust you. And he, like, drinks the rest of it and puts the empty potion flask back on the table. Oh, I don't feel so good. And he starts coughing. Oh, Cersei, do you, can you get me up? Cersei, can you call your mother, please? And it's like he's starting to, like, choke. Almost like he's having an anaphylactic reaction or something.
Just hold on. I'll go get her. Just. And, you know, she's gonna be kind of...
Yeah, you're, like, frantically running, bustling about the house. And he tips over off the couch and falls onto the ground with a thump. And, like, his mouth is, like, foaming. And his, like, face is starting to turn purple. And I think at this point, you've, like, your mom's shop is, like, literally just across the street. So maybe at this point, you've, like, fetched her, presumably, like, to, like, take a look at things, or how are you dealing with this emergency?
He said, go fetch mom, so she's running out of the house. My mom!
What is it?
I don't know what happened, it's Paul, go get him, please! He's on the floor. He's choking. I don't know what's going on. Mom,
okay,
please.
Okay. It's okay. It's okay, darling. It's okay. Calm down. It's going to be all right. One second. And she turns to her patient, tells her to wait, and runs across the street and, like, opens up the door and sees your father stiller than you would like him to be. He's not thrashing anymore. With, like, the overturned, like, potion mug on the ground, and his, like, foam is still sort of, like, dribbling out from his mouth, and his face is still kind of purple. And your mother goes, No. And she, like, runs to the side of your father and tries to, like, shakes him a little and then turns him around and, like, checks his vitals. Right? She like looks at his eyes, like checks for his breathing, like touches the side of his neck. What? And she picks up the potion that's like the cup that spilled onto the ground and like looks inside. This is an underbrewed. It's poison. How? Why were you here? Did you see him take this?
No, I didn't. I was just walking and everything else and stuff was just coming in to check on him to make sure he took his medicine, and he was foaming at the mouth, and then I ran to get you. I didn't know what to do.
She stands up quickly and immediately runs over to the kitchen and sees all the things set up for the potion that you were trying to make. And she turns around and looks at you, and for a minute you're like, fuck, my mom knows. But the next words out of her mouth were, he did this. He brewed this. He would never make a mistake like this. Why would he? And she just sort of falls to her knees and starts sobbing over your father's body, and everything goes dark. And we're back in the pit.
Cersei, Cersei, Cersei. Death by suicide. What a lovely little lie.
It's an accident. I was a child. I didn't mean to. I would never. I'm better now. I've learned from my mistakes. I can help those that I care about.
Are you? Have you? Your heart isn't in it, Cersei. One day you'll mess up again. And again. And again. You know why? Because you'll never be good enough.
Will, I can protect my people. I'm better. I've grown since then. Back then it was an accident. I haven't made a mistake since. My ma would never allow it. My ma says I've made it. She's proud. I can do this. I can protect those that I love.
Proud. Proud. Would she be proud knowing her daughter killed the love of her life and lied to her about it for 20 years?
It was an accident.
You are failure. And now, story time's over. Prepare to die.
So Riho, you are the first to go with your 21. What do you do?
Riho. And so, sorry, what's in front of us? What are we looking at? Which is still in the
it
dark.
It is pure darkness. Mm. The only thing you can really see, almost like it's illuminating itself outside of the darkness, are these two like slender, huge white hands, maybe 20 feet in front of you. Everything else is dark though, but you do know that the bottom of this floor is concave, or rather convex. No, concave. So it's sort of like a bowl, right? Like a pit. It's sloped.
So for the first time in a long time, Riho steps forward, draws their blade, and looks over at Ori, and they both move forward in tandem. They move to attack this thing in front of them. No thoughts. No fears. They're just ready to go.
Are you targeting the hands, the little glowing orbs of eyes behind it, or presumably the body it's attached to, though you've never seen its body before?
The body that's attached, the body.
Sounds good. Make your attack.
Well, that's a one.
A nat one?
That's a natural one.
Okay, do you have an extra attack?
I have two more attacks, actually.
Okay, cool. Sounds good. Yeah. If you're going to use your action to just like swing at this thing, roll all of your attacks at cool. once, and I'll resolve the nat one last.
Okay, that's a 22.
Okay.
And that is a 16.
22 and a 16. Okay, the 22 will hit, the 16 will not, mm-hmm. and the nat one will not. However, on a miss, except for the nat one, because that's special, on a miss with the 16, you can still choose to deal damage anyway. This thing's just going to get to do something right after.
Hey, they move forward, swing as hard as they can, and okay. we're doing damage. Yes, sorry.
Awesome. Are you going to take damage on both the 16 and the 22, or are you going to cut your losses and miss for the 16? It's a choice you get to make.
Oh, okay. Then I'll miss for the 16.
Okay, sounds good. So just roll damage for the 22.
That's a 1 on the D8. So that is 7 damage.
7 points of damage. Describe to me what it looks like as you charge forward swinging your sword.
Riho and Ori run forward, rapiers in hand. It's more like a feint, actually. Wink. Well, the first one misses and the second one strikes true, right into the chest of this thing.
Okay, yeah, the sword lances forward and hits something solid. It's not just a sheet of darkness. That does make you feel better, perhaps, as the point of your rapier cleaves into an object, a creature, some sort of solidness. But then with that one, that sword, that rapier sticks for a minute, and you see the right hand that's like pale and long and like with these like kind of spindly skeletal like fingers, it wiggles like the fingers ripple like grass in the wind. And as it twists its wrist, you see that hand change. It changes form into a large kind of like thick, calloused hand with dark skin now, with a specific kind of scar across the knuckles that you, Riho, recognize. This is the hand of your father. And your father's hand reaches forward and grabs you around the throat. It's a huge version of his hand, but it's unmistakable. It is his. And as it reaches forward, it's going to try to crush at you. So with your nat 1, it basically gets to make an attack against you. What is your armor class?
18.
Ooh. Okay, it's going to hit, and you are going to take... What are you at?
Health-wise, yeah. 24.
24 out of... Is that the full amount?
Out of 52.
Cool. Okay, then that's not bad at all. Okay, you're going to take 7 points of bludgeoning damage as this hand comes forward and sort of, like, squeezes you around the neck. And you can sort of, like, feel your, like, neck cracking a little. Like, you can, like, feel your esophagus, your windpipe constricting, right? Like, your eyes start to widen a bit as that hand in a vice-like grip just does not let go. And this thing in your father's voice, not in its voice, not in a child's voice, but in your father's voice says, "You, Riho, were always such a failure to me. Look at you. You can't even finish the job now."
"Not over."
"It's over when I say it's over. I brought you into this world. I will take you out."
Says every black mom. Sorry.
The parental trauma.
Yeah.
Yep. Fighting our literal demons.
It's in there.
Yeah. And that hand continues to squeeze. Was that the end of your turn?
Yeah, that's all I got.
Cool. Got it. Next up is going to be Aurora.
Okay. So as a bonus action, I want to cast Hunter's Mark.
Okay.
And then I guess I will shoot an arrow at it.
Okay, you unstring the bow around your back, you string an arrow, and where are you targeting? Are you targeting that hand that's holding Riho's neck in a vice-like grip, the other hand that's still long and pale, the eyes, or the thing beyond that Riho had stabbed?
I'm gonna target the hand that has Riho's neck.
Sounds good. Make an attack roll.
Okay. It was an 18?
An 18 would hit.
Okay. So that is, let's see, 8 and 6, right?
That's a 14. Okay.
Yep.
Awesome. What does Hunter's Mark look like as you cast it?
Actually, it's going to look like, it's going to be darkness just because of how Aurora feels. So it's just going to be darkness actually encasing whatever I can see. And then my bow is just going to pierce right through that his father's arm. And then I giggle to myself as I watch it get stabbed. And it kind of feeds my inner thoughts.
Aurora, as the arrow starts to whistle through the air, in that split second, it's like time slows, almost like gravaturgic magic settles over you as you hear that raspy, growling voice that's always been telling you to do terrible things resound again, once more, ignite in the confines of your mind.
"You don't have to hide yourself with me, Aurora. Let the arrow strike them. Why hide? Why be ashamed of what you really are? You and me cut from the same cloth."
"Okay. Well, I'm not ready to join you yet."
You shake it off? You ignore it?
I shake it off, yep.
Love it. The arrow doesn't strike Riho through the neck, but it does hit like the arm of their enlarged father's hand. So that's 14 points of piercing damage. Is there anything else you can do?
I think I just have, I have two, I have, I can hit with twice, right?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. So make your second attack.
Okay. Ooh, that's a 19.
That does hit. So roll damage.
Okay. Oh, yeah. 13.
All right. Where does the second arrow go?
I'm going to try to go for the eye.
One of the marble eyes. Okay, it strikes true. Are you gonna hit its left one or the right one?
Left.
That arrow slashes right into that eye, right into that socket, with kind of like a sick, wet noise. And this thing lets out a out loud, not just in your head. And you see its huge hand reflexively open up. And Riho, you breath rushes back into your lungs as you drop back onto the ground from where it had kind of picked you up when it grabbed you around the throat. Is that the end of your turn, Aurora?
That's the end of my turn.
Okay. Next up is going to be Saj.
You see this little scorpion kind of waving his pincers frantically, but then he realizes that he's still a freaking scorpion. So he drops his wild shape, and almost instantly Saj is back into his normal human form, and he's standing before this thing.
Yeah, you're 10 feet away. You're 10 feet away. Yeah,
right in front of it. Was I able to see when Riho slashed into it and hit it in his chest?
Yeah, you were able to perceive that was happening. You notice everything that's occurred in combat so far.
Okay. Saj raises his hand and points his index and middle finger at the center of this amorphous being, and a lightning bolt flies out of his fingers as he shoots at its chest.
Okay, is that a save on my end?
That is a save. That is a dex save, DC 14.
14. Okay, what happens if it saves? Does it take half?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm casting it at third level, which is the highest level I have. That's 8d6. So.
8d6, jeez. Okay, it hits. It does not make the save. Your thing hits it. So what does it look like as lightning explodes out of your fingers?
Yeah, Saj stands fully erect, and you see arcane energy spark all across his body. It's first at his feet, and then slowly rising up through his legs and to the abdomen and to his torso, and just erupting out of the tips of his fingers. Blue lightning just flies out of his fingers and blasts into the center of this thing for 28 points of lightning damage.
Wow.
Saj is looking hot right now.
She said we are in darkness, but that one.
Blue electricity explodes out of your fingertips, slicing through the air, cutting into the center of this thing. And for a split second, all of you see it. For the first time in your lives, you see the beast. It's a man at first is what you think, because it has a torso, right? It has a torso, and the torso is almost bare. There are pectoral muscles. You see lean abdomen. You see the size of obliques, but you also see fur. Thick tufts of white fur along its broad, gangly shoulders, going up its neck, up, up, up to its head, a wolf's head. And those eyes are set above a large, snarling snout full of gnashing white teeth and drooling black drool. It's got these long arms, improbably long. They are so long that they almost go down past its knees, down to its ankles. And this wolf has human-like hands. It has the hands of people, even though it's got the body of a wolf, the torso of a man, the legs of a predator. Furred legs as well, ending in long, thick claws, raised with inverted knees like those of an antelope. It sort of stands there, reels backward from the lightning before it dies down. And you hear it like a thump thump as it stumbles backward for half a second.
That's a face only a mother could love.
Oh, so you're just gonna hear Cersei. Oh, hail.
Yeah, I think I still have movement. I think with after seeing that grotesque creature, Saj at first felt a little, triumphant, like he conquered something by hitting it. But after seeing it, he's going to take a few steps back, try to get a little further away than 10 feet.
You said you were 10 feet away from it?
Intimidated. Well, initially I was, but I'm going to try to take, back up a bit as much as I can.
This thing has reach. Because its arms are so long. Awesome. So as you move, it's going to make an attack of opportunity. It's going to try to grab you around, around your head. What's your armor class?
14.
Okay. Saj, as you do a backstep, shooting out of the darkness, the pale hand, the one that had not yet transformed into a different person's. And you just feel an overwhelming pressure, like iron claws grabbing around your face as all of you see this hand just like sort of dwarf Saj's head and pick him off the ground and begin to squeeze. So Saj.
Yes.
You are going to take, oh, that's not so bad, 9 points of force damage as it starts to just squeeze your head trying to pop it.
All right.
Okay. And I think there's like a grotesque kind of cracking noise, and we see blood start to run down like the sides of Saja's temple as it starts to try to crack you open. And as it does, all of you see, because this arm has reached out so far out of the darkness, that its left forearm has a mark on it. You see a red line, longer than all of yours, but in the identical place on all of your forearms, a band just completely wrapping around its wrist, around in the middle between the elbow and the wrist. Almost like one of your bands has expanded and completely circumvented the length, the width of your arm. And now it's your turn, Cersei.
Okay, so we are going to try to... hopefully, maybe this might work. We're going to cast Dispel Magic to see if we can dispel the darkness.
Okay, at what level?
Third level.
Okay. I'm going to ask you for a spellcasting check because this magic is of a greater level than third, but I'll let you do it. But it might have consequences and might be unstable. Because okay. you're trying to punch above your weight class, basically. So make me a spellcasting check.
How do I do that?
So use, I think you're a cleric, right? So use wisdom plus your proficiency bonus plus a d20.
Okay. So let's see. Straight wisdom?
Just wisdom.
Okay. Just wisdom.
Ow. What'd you get?
And that one on the wisdom.
Ooh, no, I love that. I love that. I love that. I love that. Okay. I think this is what happens. What does it look like as you try to dispel the darkness?
She is more or less going to be calling out, Papa, I know I've got some things to sort out, but please, I just need your help. And we need to, I can't see this. I can't fight what I can't see. And she's going to, you know, basically more or less be praying. And then, you know, you're going to see her separating her hands with the whole little tiny ball of light that may try to spread and everything. And then with that net one, I'm assuming it, you know, in her panic, it kind of just fizzles out.
It doesn't. Cersei, it works. Light explodes out of you and washes away the darkness, threads of shadow severing. And this entire area, this pit, is cast in regular light now that the magical darkness is gone. With that nat one, though, that means y'all are gonna see some shit you're gonna wish you never saw.
Oh, God!
In this pit, it's the four of you. It's this beast, this wolf-headed man, this wolf with hands. And then you see the missing children. Off to the side, lined up in neat little rows. You're not sure if they're dead or just unconscious. By gods, you hope they're just unconscious. They're lying on their backs, their arms crossed over their tiny chests, eyes closed like bodies preparing themselves for burial. And there are doors down here, doors you didn't notice because of the darkness. And currently, all of them are open. And all of you see, lining the entire circumference of this room, the people of Idan. You see the mayor. Riho, you see your dad. You see other people. All of them are adults. All of them are, you recognize them now as your eyes flick from side to side. These people just standing in a circle, staring at all of you. All of them are mages, fighters, warriors of some regard, adepts of the weave of blood and blade. And all of them have their left sleeves cut off. And you see that all of them have that red band around their left forearm. And as that like wolf creature, the beast, sort of staggers backward from like this light exploding out from Cersei, you see its hands, both of them begin to shift. And you see on its right hand too, it also has that like red band around its forearm. And you see the hands shifting between the hands of Riho, your father, to the mayor's hand, to someone else's hand, to someone else's hand. One of every single one of these people, these thralls, these servants, these agents, these colluders, you're not sure exactly, but they're all just watching you as these hands glitch like different TV channels flipping between static until they finally settle back on those pale, regular hands of the beast. And as the light shines, the mayor, Mayor Adahun, steps forward. It's a little early. It's a little early for this, but if we want to shine a light on the darkness before the darkness is ready, I suppose this will have to do. And all of these mages, all of these adults of Adon, all their eyes lock upon the four of you. And the mayor says, the four of you are marked by the beast, which is why, of course, you've survived for so long in the manor, why the darkness hasn't already consumed you. But based on what you are doing to our lovely, our only, our tenebrous beast, I can only assume you will make the wrong choice.
No. Seeing this, oh God, please work. That's a bonus action. Okay, she is going to, I mean, probably won't be much, but still, she is going to, as a bonus action, do Healing Word.
Okay.
On,
Saj, Riho?
Riho, there we go.
Okay. What do you,
yeah.
Yeah, is your, like, anxious murmuring their Healing Word?
Yes.
Like, please work. Okay.
Yes,
how much?
Please work.
Sure. How much health?
Oh, we gonna see. Oh, we are going to cast it at a second level. Oh wait, no. We can only do. Wait, can we?
You technically can only cast a cantrip at a level spell as bonus action. Like you can't cast two level spells. But I'll let you attempt to do it again if you try to make a spellcasting check to see what the consequences are.
Damn it.
You gonna take that devil's bargain?
Just give it point time. Maybe. Okay, so you said I have to roll wisdom?
Yes, make another wisdom check and add your proficiency bonus.
Okay. Okay, so that is 13 for wisdom. Where do I find my proficiency bonus if I have one?
You're all level 6, right? So it should be the same.
Okay.
Plus 3.
Oh, yeah, plus 3. So that would be 16.
Total?
Yeah.
Okay, roll the healing for healing word.
Okay. I'm so sorry if this doesn't work. Please don't be mad at me. 12.
Okay, Riho, before you restore 12 hit points, you say, please work, and boom, we all feel, tugging through the weave, a wave of healing magic shoot out from Circe and toward Riho. But the mayor goes, I don't think so, and sort of flicks his hand dismissively, and like a train changing tracks, that healing goes to the beast. And we see like the beast sort of like rip the arrow out of its eye, and the eye, like the jelly reforms, the liquid like re-solidifies, and like the hole in its chest sort of like start to seal up from the rapier. And the beast sort of shakes its like huge furred wolf head and like recalibrates. And the mayor goes on to say, you find yourselves in a chamber with the most adept mages of Adon, which is to say, of the entire Everrealm, if I might be so proud. But we're not here to kill the four of you, no. Well, at least if you make the right choice. You see, this mark of the beast, it only appears on the chosen few. Each of us were chosen as children. We were. We knew we were special. That's what this mark means. This mark means if we survive the trial of the beast every 20 years, then when we grow up, when we become adults, when we become people with agency, with power, we can have some of its power for our own. Why do you think Adon is so special? Where do you think all this magic comes from? And he gestures toward the unconscious or dead, you're not sure, children on the ground in front of you. Every 20 years, the beast awakens from hibernation to feed, to hunt, to consume, to devour. And when it does, it generates enough power, enough magic to breed innovations, breakthroughs for all of Adon. That's how we were able to create Time Stop. That's how we were able to make such incredible miracles happen. It takes suffering for majesty to occur. And the four of you as chosen, well, the beast can make your dreams come true too. Sash, I remember you, running around. Runt of the litter always picked on, but look at you now. Successful businessman, or so you hope. With the beast's magic, we can make your dreams come true. Rondi number 5 can be everything you've ever dreamed of it to be. Riho. And it's your father, actually, who steps forward at the mayor's mention of your name. Riho, this is it. I've tried to prepare you for this moment, but then you left and never said word for 20 years. But look at the young person you've become. You're strong. Good with a sword because of Oran. If you accept the beast's magic, you and Oran can become one fully. And with this next cycle, your mother will never be truly gone. She died, but the beast's power, with its food, can restore even the dead to life. And the mayor turns to Cersei. That's right, even the dead to life. Your father must miss you, Cersei. You must miss him every day. Most of the townsfolk believe it was a suicide, but we all know the truth down here. Down here, there's no hiding from the darkness in each of our hearts, so why stifle it when we can embrace it, Aurora? And the mayor turns to you. Aurora, now you are one of the new mark that I am the most excited to welcome into our fold. You see, every 20 years the beast awakens, but every 200 it chooses a vessel. It chooses a speaker. One that can hold its secrets. One that can hear its voice even beyond its slumber. That darkness is in you, Aurora, and it is nothing to be ashamed of. It is nothing to fear. It is good. It makes miracles happen. Come into the fold. You'll not have to hide anymore. What do the four of you say?
I look at Saj, Cersei, Riho. What do you guys think?
Cersei's gonna be in tears, just crying right now.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Saj is still dangling in the air, held by his head, right?
You are. Yeah, actually you are. Okay. You know what? As the mayor turns his attention to all of you, the beast slowly lowers you, Saj, until like your feet are like touching the ground and it releases you.
Okay. Can I glance around? I want to see if I see Olu.
You do. Among the 5 children on the ground of this pit, you see a straw-haired person. Their eyes are closed, so you can't confirm if they're blue. But they do have this like tunic on, and their face bears a striking resemblance to their mother.
I'm gonna look at my friends. I know you guys have dealt with a lot. I know this offer probably isn't very, very enticing to you all. What do you say?
Cersei is going to look at him between tears and, you know, trying to choke back sobs. But my mom, she would never forgive me if she found out. It was an accident, but if she... I can't. She disowned me. She's all I've got left.
Ori looks at Riho. Yo, this is the reason why I was made. This is the reason why I'm here. Make the right choice. And Riho looks at the mayor and says, you can bring back... Well, first he looks around. Does he see Rain amongst the bodies?
Okay. You know what? Riho, as you look around, you don't see like Rain's like physical body. These seem to be the most recent children. You don't see any of the children that disappeared 20 years ago with you, like Malcolm or Rain, right? These are the current children. But as you look, you catch movement out of the corner of your eye. Do you turn to look?
Yes.
You turn and you see Rain. Rain, as you remember them, 15 years old, toothy grin, dark, curious eyes. And it's like time pauses as you see them. They're not even translucent like a ghost. They look real. And you get the feeling, like a gut feeling that these people, the mayor, the beast, they can't see this. Only you can. As you look over at Rain, their eyes sort of like, their head cocks to the side and their eyes look at you urgently. And boof, we catch just a glimpse of a memory of you, I think, walking home from school. There's still scars on your body, I think, from the experiments that were wrought on you after Rain's death, right? And there's so much grief in your heart. Your heart feels like it's splitting open. And then, boo-boo, we flash to another memory of you and Rain on some swings. and the swings are like creaking, and the two of you are like side by side, like holding on to like the chains, right? Like your feet sort of kicking a little, like long enough to finally reach the dirt now. And Rain sort of looks at you askance, and like they're backlit by the setting sun, and you are just like taken by how beautiful they are. What are you staring at, Riho?
Just at you. You're all I can see.
Shut up.
Sorry. That's so awkward.
You're all I can see, too. See how awkward that makes you feel?
Yeah, but I meant it.
I meant it, too. I mean, seriously, you're so cool, and you're so strong, and you stand up for all of us, and you're the best damn fighter in school, and everyone knows it, and you're just so amazing. And they look at you, and you see, like, genuine admiration in their eyes that you've never seen in anyone else's.
I'm nothing compared to you. You're so kind, and you care about everyone, and you're so thoughtful, and you see me. You really see me.
Thanks. I mean, I only see what's real. I only see the truth, which is that you're a really cool person, Riho. I really like spending time with you. You're a really good friend.
Look down. Riho looks down at his arms and kind of sees was reminded of the pain he's felt, and I am real, aren't I?
Of course you are.
Thank you. Sorry, I don't know. Thank you.
Hey, when we grow up, you gotta promise. When we leave Adon, we're gonna be adventurers together. You know, like heroes. We're gonna go around the Everrealm. We're gonna save people. We're gonna help them.
Pinky promise.
Pinky promise. And Rain holds out their pinky and interlocks it with yours. And boosh, you're back in the pit. You blink, Rain Spectre is gone.
Riho asks the mayor, can you undo the past? Can you bring back Rain?
Well, that is too bad. That is the one thing we haven't quite figured out yet. A child consumed by the beast. That's the one thing we can't change. Magic has to come from somewhere, but their sacrifices are always appreciated.
Man, you see Riho just start to shake and then tear up a bit. And then I guess the decision's made already.
Before you say it out loud or take action to affirm your decision, Saj, you feel a presence off to your left. A presence that is not the beast, a presence that is not the mayor or its circle of silently watching adults waiting for your decision to be made. A different presence, a presence both familiar and so long ago. Do you turn to face it?
I do.
And you see Rain. And as you lock eyes with Rain, you hear, well, Rain, water washing down through the pit, and then you are back at the embankment. And Colton is in front of you trying to stuff that jade stone into your mouth so you'll choke on it, so you'll eat it, so you'll swallow it. And then, out of nowhere, barreling through like the murk and the mud and the water, Rain pummels Colton around the knees, even though Colton is literally three times their size. But because, you know, they tackle them really, really low, even the huge giants have to go down, right? Rain gets them around the knees and they like fall onto the ground, and Rain is shouting like a maniac. He's, get off my friend! It's like punching, even though Rain is so much smaller than Colton, and all the other bullies are also bigger than Rain, and Colton is like, oh, what the fuck? Oh, fucking weirdo, and sort of like punches Rain across the head, and Rain like coughs and rolls off. But the other bullies sort of like let you go, Saj, and they're sort of like taken aback by the fact that someone's like coming to your apparent rescue. And Colton starts to get up, like rubbing like his forehead, looking around woozily, and Rain like starts to like scrabble back up onto their feet, and like a feral animal, like literally foaming at the mouth with how mad they are at Colton, like starts to go at them. And Colton's like, oh, okay, gee, okay, fine, you weird fucking losers. Come on, let's get out of here, weirdos, they're weird rocks. And like the bullies are so off put by Rain's like ferocity that they fuck off. They like leave you alone. And it's just you and Rain in the mud by the river. You okay?
Yeah, I'm fine. Wow. Thank you, Rain. Thank you.
Yeah, of course. That fucking cocksucker. I hate him.
Yeah, me too.
Aurora taught me that word.
Wow. It figures.
Oh no, your collection. Shit.
Don't worry about it. There's more to find. Wow, thank you. That was incredible. You're a freaking beast.
I was just so full of adrenaline. I'm surprised you didn't beat the shit out of me, honestly.
Oh my god. How did you even know to come here?
Oh, I don't know. You've just been kind of absent, you know, from when we're all hanging out and playing, and I figured maybe Colton was getting to you or something. I just had a gut feeling.
Well, I'm glad you did.
Yeah, I tried to go to your house, you know, your room above the bar, but your mom said you were out, and that was just weird because it was starting to rain, and that didn't really sound like you, so I thought maybe you were getting into, you know, something was happening to you, and I'm glad I came out here. What dicks?
I have a question for you. Saj is in this moment at this time, but does he still have the awareness of the quote-unquote present?
Of the present?
Yes.
You do not. This is sort of like you're back in the memory again, right? So the logic of everything else falls away, and this is just how it happened.
Okay. I need to learn how to do what you did.
Well, I did learn how to throw a punch from Riho, and Aurora taught me that word, and Cersei showed me how to bandage up my leg after I got my ass kicked inevitably by someone much bigger than me. But honestly, I guess the only thing I can really teach you is just, I don't know, being brave.
Yeah.
But Saj, I think you are brave already. I mean, look at you. This collection is freaking awesome, and even though those kids are such douchebags about it, you do it anyway, and I don't ever want you to stop.
I won't. I promise I won't.
You're gonna do something really cool with these rocks one day. I just know it. You're gonna make something really awesome.
I will. How did you say that? What was it? Cocksucker?
Yeah,
that's what you
said? Cocksucker.
Aurora told you?
Yeah, right. I don't know why you want to suck on a rooster, but whatever.
Yeah, that's weird.
Hold on. And Rain reaches down and picks up the jade. Looks like he left one behind. Here.
Thanks. He asked me if that was my favorite. I lied.
Oh, no. All right, well, maybe this can be your new favorite?
It is now. I didn't have to eat it.
And Rain hands it to you, and you are back in the pit. You blink, Rain is not there anymore, but you feel something in the palm of your hand. Saj, it's flat and smooth and cool.
I look at my hand.
It's that jade pebble. As you look down at the jade stone in your hand, Cersei, you too feel a tugging sensation, something in your gut telling you to look to your right.
We're looking. She might, like, in her whole inner thoughts, be like, Papaw, and see, and look, or see who it is moving, maybe.
Mm. Through your tears, through your haze of pain and grief and confusion and a desire for guidance, right? You see Rain. And then we find you and Rain in the woods. And you're holding a wooden sword. And Rain is also holding a wooden sword. And the two of you are sparring. I think this is several weeks after your father dies.
Mama would never approve of this. I mean, I'm not supposed to wield weapons. We're healers.
Cersei, if everyone did what they were supposed to do, well, then I guess evil would have its way. You know what I mean? Then all the tyrants would get what they want. Because they're just counting on good people to do what they're supposed to do.
If my mom finds out, I'm going to be grounded forever. She said a Halakesh is a healer, and that's it. We don't fight in silly battles and skirmishes and whatever else she called them.
Well, knowing how to fight is kind of like healing, right? It's like preemptive healing, because if you kill the things that's going to hurt people, then they won't be hurt. That's what you can say to her.
Yeah, I want to be able to, like, protect people, you know, before they get hurt. You know, but my mom, she... I wanna learn to fight.
That's the freaking spirit. You're not gonna be a mama's girl forever. Neither of us are gonna be 15 years old forever, okay? We're both gonna turn 18. We're both gonna move out of this really weird place. And we're gonna do whatever we wanna do. The entire Everrealm is... What is your dad? What did he always used to say? The entire Everrealm is your oyster.
The sacred ingredient to his seafood stew is oysters.
Right, yeah, that was his follow-up. He was such a great dude. He'd love it if he knew you were sparring.
All right. I'm going to do it.
All right. You ready?
I think. Yeah, yes. Yes. I'm.
Remember.
I'm going to learn to fight.
Swing with your hips. Come at me.
She's going to run. Swing her sword.
Ah! And I think on the two of your swords colliding on that noise of the hollow, almost like hollow bones thudding against each other, you're back in the pit. Blink. Rain is gone. But that feeling remains in your chest, that feeling of courage. And now, Aurora, you also feel a tugging. But unlike everyone else's, this one is the most faint. Like it has to get through layers of shadow and cobweb and darkness to reach you. But you do feel a faint tugging, begging you, urging you, asking you to turn to the left.
Turn to the left.
And you see Rain standing there. No one else can see them. And when you blink, you're no longer in the pit. You are in a forest. You're by a thorn bush, by a boulder. You're standing on one side of the boulder, and Rain is leaned up against the other, and you have just finished telling them about Colton. Wow. Okay, that's a lot. Wow. But are you okay, Aurora? The voices, when did they start?
I think they started when we started going to the mansion, honestly. That's when I remembered it.
I see. Well, all of us have that mark and can see the mansion, but we don't hear the voices. You know what? Two things. One, your secret's safe with me.
Thanks, Rain.
I'm not telling anyone if you don't want me to. Two, well, I guess there are three things, so let me retract that. Three things. The second one is, I think maybe the reason why you hear the voices, this is just a guess, but I think it's maybe because you're really special, Aurora. I mean it. You've always been, like, I don't know, like, weirdly attuned, I guess. Like, I know Cersei's really good at healing, even though, you know, I don't think that's the only thing she has to be able to do. And I know that Riho's really good at fighting, and Saj is really smart, knows a lot about rocks, and has so many cool ideas in his head. But you've always been, I don't know, like, aware of stuff, I guess. Like, I guess if you were a door, you'd just be open. So you can see the entire world, but sometimes things get in too, I guess.
No, I think you're right.
Are you scared?
No.
Of the voices, I mean?
No. I just would like them to quiet down, but they don't scare me.
Okay. That's good. That's good. That does make me feel better, because if they were scaring you, then obviously I'd try to tell them to fuck off. But if they're not scaring you, that's good. Which, I guess that leads me to my third point. The third thing I want to say to you, Aurora, is, hey, we're friends, okay? And no matter what, nothing's gonna change that. Whether you hear voices or don't hear voices, whether they scare you or don't scare you, nothing is ever gonna change that. So if one day things change, if the voices get more aggressive, if they tell you to hurt someone again, maybe instead of immediately doing that, you can talk to me, and we can talk it through.
I like that idea.
I'm here for you, Aurora. I don't want you to feel like you have to deal with this alone.
I appreciate that, Rain.
Yeah. And I don't want anyone to... Because if you tell an adult about this, I feel like they just, like, ship you off somewhere. You know what I mean? They try to, like, control you or say that you're crazy or lock you up or something. And I don't think that's right. I think you've got a gift and you just have to know how to use it, right? So you don't end up hurting people you don't mean to hurt.
You're right. I'll just talk to you.
Cool. And you can talk to the others too if you want, but your secret is safe with me. Cross my heart. Hope to die.
I really appreciate that, Rain.
Absolutely.
I feel like I can only talk to you.
I get that, but I hope that one day maybe other people will get to prove to you that you can talk to them too. Because I think you're amazing, and I think anyone would be lucky to call you their confidant.
And I turn to the sword, and then I just throw it behind the bush again.
You know what? I'm going to bring this idea to the others, but I think maybe in the mansion there's that huge library, right? Maybe if we go there, I can try to find some books about the voices and help you out?
Yeah, I think we should.
Awesome. Okay, great. I'll bring it to the others. Come on.
All right, come on. Let's go.
And the two of you turn and book it through the woods, and then you blink and you are back in the pit. Rain is not there. The only thing that remains is that feeling of trust you had in them. That still brims in your chest. And now we pull back and we see all four of you facing down the barrel of a decision. Are you gonna let the beast eat these kids? And in return, get the life you've always dreamed of? Or are you going to face the beast and try to cut it down? I feel like Saj and Riho had something, like, specific ideas you wanted to do. So I feel like maybe we can, like, pan over to Riho first.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Riho looks at his father and says, Pa, you sacrificed me to feed this bloody bullshit. And he looks over at the mayor. And you sacrificed Rain to feed this petty bullshit. Not again. Fuck you.
Okay, Riho, what do you do?
Riho looks at his companions and says, are you ready?
I think we pan over to Saj.
Saj looks at Rio, hangs his head for a second, then lifts it back up and says, we may be overpowered here. We may be facing, we may be in a situation where we can't win. So maybe the right thing is to give up, to let what happens happen. And he like looks at the stone in his palm, and he starts walking towards the beast. And he says, I want to offer this to you. How close can I get?
Real close. You're not walking forward with any sort of threatening aura, right? No. You're just sort of striding?
I'm just striding.
Okay. Then the beast lowers its massive, pale, spindly fingers and cocks its huge, drooling maw to one side, those marble-like eyes glossy and glazed upon you.
And I'll look in the beast's eyes, and I'll say, I'd like to offer this to you in tribute. In my past, at one point, I was almost forced to eat this stone, and now I'm going to try to make you eat stone. And I'm gonna grab him, just run up and try to touch him, grab him. And this is kind of up to your discretion. I'm going to use meld into stone and put myself and the beast into the stone below us, just drop into it and then dispel the spell.
So the two of you are stuck?
Yeah.
Ooh, okay, yeah, Saj, as you step forward, you grab the beast's wrist, finger, hand?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the wrist.
Okay, the wrist. And you cast the spell, and we see like this cement sort of masonry underneath all of you repel its way up and then almost like pull the two of you down into it. And make me a spell casting check with your spell casting modifier plus your proficiency bonus to see how successful this is.
Okay, my spell casting modifier is wisdom, 3 plus 6 to this roll. A 13 on the die, plus 3 for wisdom, and plus 3 for my proficiency bonus makes it 19.
Yeah, okay. The two of you could fall into the stone. How far down are you trying to drag both of you?
Until we're both under, completely submerged in the stone.
Both of you? Are you sacrificing yourself here?
I don't know. We'll see what happens.
Okay, all right, sounds good. I just want to know your intention. Okay, Saj and the beast sink into the stone and vanish. And the mayor steps forward, like fury is now brimming underneath his perfectly manicured face. You, your little group. Cersei, Aurora, don't tell me the two of you are making the wrong choice too.
I'm either gonna do something really, really stupid or really, really great, depending on how this turns out. So Cersei is going to, she's going to stop crying. She's going to stand up. You know, I made my mistakes in the past, but I've made progress till this point. And quite frankly, I wouldn't change a thing that I've done. Yes, I've made mistakes, but I know I can change and do better. And right now, with the things that I have done and the things that I am doing, I deserve everything that this life has to give me. And as she is speaking and standing up, you're just going to see like this kind of light kind of erupting from her. It's like, I have my mamma, I have my papa, he's looking over me, and I have my friends. And then the light is gonna just explode, and she's gonna cast Beacon of Hope, maybe?
Okay. Yeah, what does that do?
It says the spell bestows hope and vitality. Choose any number of creatures within range for the duration. Each target has advantage on wisdom saving throws and death saving throws and regains the maximum number of hit points possible from any healing.
Fantastic. Are you selecting all of your friends?
I'm selecting all of my friends.
Perfect. Aurora, Riho, and even Saj, but we'll get to you in a second. The three of you feel your bodies wrapped up in this like warm light, this surge of courage that like runs through your veins hotter than adrenaline, this radiant divine confidence emanating from Cersei. I have to say, Cersei, I am disappointed, but I am not surprised. Like mother, like daughter. Your mother didn't show up to the meeting tonight either. She had a bad feeling about it. But we will have to explain away the unfortunate and untimely death of our daughter to her in some way, won't we? We'll come up with a timely excuse. Aurora.
Yes.
What are you doing?
I'm actually, I want to test something. So in my backpack, I want to light my rope of flame. Yeah, and I want to put it towards the line on my arm and see if it does anything.
Is your intention to burn it off?
Yes.
What feeling suffuses you as you try to purge this mark from your soul? Like, what is the emotion that's driving you here? What bonds, what memories are flashing through your mind?
Rain. The moment I had with Rain. I want to feel that innocence again.
You pull that flaming rope out of your pack, the tip of it ignites, and you press it to that mark. And as you do, you see a second hand overlaying yours, Rain's hand, guiding you. And even though it burns and it begins to hurt, it's almost like you can hear Rain's voice in your ear go, "Hey, hey, it's okay. You got this. You got this." And this like huge burn mark begins to erupt along your arm, right? Like searing against that red mark. And there's like screaming, a really loud screaming that's not in your head anymore. It's not the children. And you realize it's you. You, Aurora, you're screaming. This pain is immaculate. It is holy. It is profane. It is divine. It is perfect. It is a pain you've never felt before, searing through your nerves like blissful agony. You are ripping a part of your soul out, and you are perfect. Your flesh sears. It bubbles. That red line begins to vanish. And as that happens, all four of you feel the same burning on your forearms. You are all connected. You were the chosen ones of the prior generation. And one of your choices will always affect the others. You are bonded by something stronger than this magic. You are bonded by friendship. And all of you see that same burn mark begin to like expand in the exact same way on Aurora's arm that it does on each of you. And we cut down underground to you, Saj. In the middle of this happening, you feel your arm burning even as you become encased in stone, even as your lungs start to fill with soil, as it starts to crush you from all around you. And tell me, Saj, what is it that breaks you out?
I think feeling the release of burden from all of my friends as they face all of their trauma from their past, from their present, and for what they think is going to be their future. That magnified by the beacon of hope that was cast by Cersei, and that by nature Cersei kind of is. I think that's what I hold on to try to get out of the situation that I'm in.
You hold on to Cersei. You hold on to that pain that feels good almost as it's burning off this corruption on your arm. You hold on to your friends, Aurora, Ori, Riho, Cersei, Rain. And in an explosion of earth, Saj erupts out of the ground and lands next to all of you. Some dirt caking and crawling and pistoning off of their shoulders, but they look mostly fine. And there's like a final searing sensation as that mark is burned off of all of your fleshes. And the mayor! Ha ha! Wow, okay! So a death wish it is. And all around this massive pit, each of these mages, there's at least like 20 or 30 of them start to pick up their arms. Boom, you see glyphs, boom, 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 begin to like appear in the air. Fire begin to erupt like dunamancy spells starting to waver around their bodies, rocks levitating off of the floor. And then, as if to make matters worse, the earth shakes and exploding out of the ground, one hand hits the ground, another hand hits the ground, and this beast pulls itself up out of the crevice and like drags itself to its full height and snarls. And the four of you, I think, facing down against all of these adult mages all around you, this huge, massive wolf beast. I think there's a moment where we pan around and it's the four of you almost like fucking Avengers style in like the center of this pit, like steeling yourselves against this onslaught. And I want to get a vignette from each of you. What do we see as you face off against impossible odds, but ignited against this beacon of hope, feeling like you still got a chance here? Let's start with Riho.
Okay. here we are at long last. This, for real, this feels like it. Like all the pain, all the anguish, everything they suffered was meant for this moment. Rio steps forward once again, and before him is Ori. And Rio steps forward into Ori, and for the first time ever, they seem to just be one. And Rio looks across at his friends, and sorry, Rihori looks over across at his friends and says, "We're ready."
Yeah! Okay, we pan over to Saj.
Saj sees this beast return out of the depths of the earth again, and he's like shaking his head. Says, "Well, I guess we're gonna have to finish this the old-fashioned way," and brushes the dust off of him, the dirt off of him, and he uses his last wild shape, and you see him get bigger and bulkier and furrier as he turns into an ape.
Yeah! So like strength rips through, your muscles bulge, your teeth elongate into sharp jaws that would give this beast a run for their money, and you sort of stand there in an aggressive, ready stance. And we're gonna pan down over to Cersei.
Cersei, she is going to, you know, still has her tear-stained face, but she's going to sniffle. All right, we can do this. And on her neck, she has a pendant that she got from her dad and everything. That's glowing bright, and of course, the magic that she's currently channeling in the palm of her hand's glowing bright. She's like, "We can do this. We can save everyone." And kind of just be like, totally like, "Okay, yeah, we're gonna do this shit. I'm totally brave right now. I don't care if there's tears streaming down my face, we're gonna do this shit." So yeah.
Hell yeah. I love that. Tears streaming down your face, courage brimming in your throat, even though you're scared. You fight through it, you feel your friends are with you, you feel your father is with you, and you face the onslaught. And we pan up over to Aurora.
Okay, I'm standing there, and then I use Disguise Self and change my short sword into the sword that killed Colton.
Ooh, okay!
And I stand there and I'm waiting. That same hunger that I had for Colton, I have for this monster.
Yeah, your sword elongates, becomes rusty almost, and we almost see like a glimmer of blood on it, blood from a bully. As you look up at this beast, and there's a moment where you're like, huh, at least Colton had cooler insults. Kind of like, you know, like looking up at this like shitty little thing that you're like, all right, I'm just gonna gut you like I did Colton, right? standing, all of you, like shoulder to shoulder, back to back, facing this off, and then you all feel a fifth presence. Standing shoulder to shoulder to all of you, back to back to all of you, and Rain looks side to Saj, side over to Riore, side over to Cersei, side over to Aurora, and says, "All right, guys, let's do this again." And we are going to end the session there. So thank you, everyone, so much for tuning in to this particular Everrealm special. Wow! What a time, what a time. I've been your GM for the evening. Connie Chiang. You can find me all across the internet at By Connie Chiang. That's BYCONNIECHANG. I'm going to pass things. Thanks so much for playing here. This is a lot of fun. I'm going to pass things up and over to Elias for ceremonial outro things.
Oh my God. That was so much fun. Thank you, Connie.
Thank you. You're amazing. Thank you.
Oh, absolutely. This was a blast.
You're amazing.
Thanks for having me.
It was like really hard to play because I was like so entranced. So I'm still in the story.
Oh God, that was freaking amazing. My emotions, but oh my God, that was so great.
Yeah, there were several moments where you, Jinx, were like, like I love your facial responses. I love your reactions to everything that was happening. It was such a joy to witness.
Sorry, I was trying to keep it quiet, but I forgot I was on camera. When she said, "Are you okay?" I'm like, "Oh shit! I forgot I was on camera."
What's up, it's Elias. Just wanted to say thank you for checking us out. If you enjoyed our shenanigans in the Everrealm, please consider sponsoring us via listener support on Anchor and helping us make this show bigger and better. If the commitment is in your jam, you can make a donation via the Ko-Fi link in the show description. Conversely, if you aren't able to do that, bills, etc., trust me, I get it.
You can show love by leaving a rating, a review, or just sharing the show. Again, thanks for listening. Peace.